They would also provide the shock troops in the periodic campaigns against drink and against prostitution. Women, also middle-class women, would receive less education than their male counterparts, and it would be of inferior quality. The university in Zurich would be the first university to admit women, and that was in 1865. The British universities admitted women, but London, the University of London, refused them degrees until 1878. Oxford and Cambridge waited until after the First World War to bestow degrees on women. The same would be true of the great German universities, Berlin, Leipzig, Marburg, and so on. Universities which in this period came to a real position of great influence, not simply in Europe, but around the world. German universities would, in this period, reach the pinnacle of their influence and real models for the American university system. Middle-class women were then not supposed to work. Part of what the middle-class household was all about was freeing women. They were freeing women for their own sphere. It is a period of separate spheres where women would remain in the home. Middle-class men would tend to the great world of affairs and of business. Middle-class women found their way into some occupations, even professions. There were some women who were trained as doctors, doctors for women. More on the continent than elsewhere. But women tended to find their way into the less prestigious middle-class occupations. Primary education would come to be dominated by women teachers by 1914, and women would flood into the ranks of what we'll talk about in just a moment, the new tertiary sector of white-collar employees, clerical workers, and so on. It would also be in this period that one sees middle-class pleasures come into their own. The pleasures of the prosperous bourgeoisie. It would be in the period after mid-century that the rise of travel and tourism would really begin. An escape from the crowded cities to spas, to take the waters, as it was put, to such places as Vichy in France or to Baden-Baden in Germany. These were places that in the past only aristocrats could have afforded and have visited, but were now increasingly visited by elements of the prosperous middle class. Indeed, the very notion of the grand tour in the 18th century, early 19th century, was considered part of an aristocratic education to take what was referred to as the grand tour. Middle class aristocratic persons would travel across Europe, visiting France, visiting Italy, and so on. But by the middle of the 19th century, tourism had begun to become actually an industry, a big business. In 1851, a man by the name of Thomas Cook organized a tour to visit the Crystal Palace in London, and then decided after that to begin other tours, these to the continent, reenacting in many ways the grand tour of the aristocrats. Thomas Cook would become one of the great pioneers of the tourist industry, and it was a tourist industry driven certainly not by aristocrats, but by increasingly prosperous members of the European middle class, English middle class in this instance, with the leisure time, with the funds and the leisure time to visit. In 1835, Carl Baedeker published his first guidebook, A Tourist's Guide to the Rhine, and followed it up with a series of other guidebooks, becoming a model for all of the travel guides that now fill our bookstores. The Baedeker guidebooks would be the Bibles of European middle-class tourists beginning to travel from country to country. In the past, in the 18th century, it was quite obvious that, and certainly taken for granted, that French aristocrats, English aristocrats, German aristocrats all had more in common with one another than they did with the middle class elements of their own nationality. By the end of the 19th century, one couldn't quite say this because about the middle class, because so much of middle class liberalism, middle class or political orientation was bound up with the nation. And yet, there is quite clearly by the end of the 19th century an emerging European middle class with a similar set of tastes, a similar set of attitudes, a similar set of orientations, not simply toward politics, but toward recreation, family values, and so on.